my early memories as a child were of dinners with some of the artists who I now represent and know me since I was 5 years old. And it's a really lovely relationship that has grown over the years to, you know, now representing them.
Welcome to the Design Pataki podcast, a show that deconstructs the Indian and international design world with leading industry experts. I'm Isha Gupta, the founder of Design Pataki. Through our podcast, we aim to promote thoughtful and incisive conversations on design, art, and architecture. Collecting art is a millennial. Saskia Fernando belongs to one of Sri Lanka's leading design families, with the goal of introducing an international audience to Sri Lankan contemporary art. While establishing a dialogue between local artists and institutions, she established the Saskia Fernando Gallery in 2009. This Colombo-based gallery is the largest contemporary art gallery in the island, housing two exhibition spaces and a private viewing gallery of over 300 works. Saskia makes sure to represent both leading and emerging artists and intends to create a sustainable future for the Sri Lankan art industry. Over the past decade, Saskia has launched multiple online platforms presenting contemporary Sri Lankan art online and has collaborated with galleries internationally on the presentation of Sri Lankan contemporary art. A passionate patron of culture, Saskia is playing an instrumental role in putting the island nation's art on the map. Hi Saskia, thank you so much for being with us today. We're excited to talk to you about collecting art as a millennial and how one should get started. So my first question to you is going to be, how did you start collecting art and what really drew you to it?
It's a really interesting subject for me to talk about, actually, because I'm generally talking about my role as gallerist and less as collector. So it's forced me to sort of take a different stance and actually look at why I started collecting, which I rarely speak about. It was, for me and my sister, a very natural path, I think, to develop an interest in collecting, because my father was collecting for as long as we can remember. Even when we were quite young and living in Australia before we moved back to Sri Lanka. So we were really surrounded by art and antiques and this environment of collecting from quite a young age. It seemed to be a very normal thing in our lives. And I think because of this, it was just that sort of natural path of developing an eye at quite a young age and being drawn to and understanding what you like at quite a young stage, which has been a massive part of why I entered into the art industry in my profession later on. So that has been for me just basically something that started at quite a young age naturally.
And what any particular incident that really drew you to art and which made you think this is something I want to do? I want to open a gallery, I want to be a gallerist.
In any particular incident is a little bit difficult for me to identify just because everything was about art. And my early memories as a child were of dinners with some of the artists who I now represent and know me since I was 5 years old. And it's a really lovely relationship that has grown over the years to, you know, now representing them. But it's just this environment which had this influence. And I don't think there was a moment where I knew. I actually decided to open the gallery in my late 20s. So it wasn't so clear for me. I was trying to escape. I think because it was so much a part of our environment, I actually tried to get away from it. You know, in those rebellious stages where you're trying to, you know, establish your own identity. But it was just so much, I think, ingrained in my being that I had to come back to it, and it was so much a part of who I am. And without wanting to sound vague, I think it's just been my environment and the environment that I'm happiest in and feel most fulfilled to be surrounded by.
And what would be your advice for first-time millennial art collectors? How should they get started?
I always meet first-time collectors and find that they're feeling quite intimidated, right, and overwhelmed by the art scene. And that's why I always advise young collectors or first-time collectors who might even have decided to start later on in their lives to take their time.
there are those, of course, who just know, and it's very clear to them what they do and don't like. And you meet very different personalities. And I think it's about really understanding the scene and the artist that you're interested in, and looking enough to be confident about a purchase, and researching a piece before you simply invest in it just because it's a popular artist, really knowing what you're looking at. And the more you look, the more you understand. And I think it's important to take one's time with that.
You mentioned how some of them are apprehensive. So what are some of the common barriers of entry which discourage young people from collecting art? I think you mentioned one of them.
I think it's this sort of... the intimidating nature of the art world, you know. I think oftentimes people feel this walking into a gallery anywhere in the world. It has this sort of vibe about it, which is unfortunate. And that's where social media has, of course, changed the way that people interact. But I think those sort of barriers to entry are really that, the reputation that the art scene has, which is why people are also drawn to it. And I think that is a definite one, but also just, there are things that I feel have changed a lot, but that accessibility to art and art galleries and sometimes galleries are also not necessarily open enough to working with younger collectors. They're very specific about who they want to connect with. Although I think all of that is changing in this day and age. This sort of profiling of people is changing in the way that we perceive who, what collectors and how to approach people who are interested in art is really kind of changing. Of course, price, for young collectors in particular, this is a very important thing, and it's not easy. And of course, you know, younger people tend to live in nowadays in the cities, at least in smaller spaces, apartment living, etc., means that you also have to consider location. I really think there are solutions to all of these sort of barriers. And nowadays in particular, things are changing quite quickly.
Do you feel that galleries, you said they're adapting a bit. How do you see galleries adapting and making it more accessible to younger buyers? How is that changing?
As I mentioned earlier, in social media, I think has every gallery is online via Instagram in particular. I think COVID was such a huge turning point as well for the gallery scene internationally, where we all kind of had to, if not already a strong online presence, had to really focus on that entirely. So it just meant that everybody was there on Instagram, on their websites, making sure that viewing rooms were up. So I think this makes a huge difference in how you can access information. I mean, galleries are now very open to publishing prices online. It's a huge difference. I mean, this was a big sort of no-no maybe 10 years ago. Those kind of things were kept much more discreet. But now it's all about the transparency and keeping that presence online. So
Vogue magazine called Instagram the world's most talked about new art dealer. How much of a role, I mean, I know you said that now, you know, it's opened up a lot. So how much of a role would you say social media plays in the sale of an artwork? So one is, you know, where there's information available, but also in the sale of an artwork to also a gallery, which is looking at artist trajectories as well at the same time.
As much as I acknowledge the need for galleries to be on Instagram, I don't necessarily like to approach Instagram as a platform for selling work. What I think is really important is the information that Instagram supplies on art, on a particular exhibition, on a particular artist.
Right.
So I know what we've tried to focus on is really making sure that we put as much information as we can out there, whether it's videos of our exhibitions on IGTV, walkthroughs. We just try to make it as informative as possible. I still prefer as a gallery to connect with the collectors who we're dealing with, and I think that's incredibly important for an artist's career, for the trajectory of their work. I think it's just so important that you connect with the collector base, and it's not this sort of instant purchase that happens. Of course it happens.
Yeah.
You know, we're not trying to stop it from happening, but I don't want to approach Instagram in that way where it just becomes a sale platform online store. We do look at having merchandise and publications online in that form, but I just think art has to be respected in a different way and approached in a different way.
So what are you trying to say, that it creates a different connect when an artist actually meets their bio, as opposed to it just being something, you know, you've purchased online? Or, you know, is that what you're trying to say? Is that it's a nicer journey?
Yeah, and it's not always easy for the artist to connect, to meet the collector, but it is, even if it's via the gallery, we are able to understand the collector more. And our idea as galleries is to work with collectors on a more sort of long-term basis. And those are the relationships that I've built over the last 12 years that are very meaningful. And of course, they support the gallery structure and the whole sort of ecosystem.
Right.
So it is more sort of about building those relationships, whereas the damage, I think the dangers of Instagram are the sort of instant purchasing and that destroying those relationships, which support the art scene, are incredibly important.
Also, do you think that, you know, all the shows last year have been online, and I've seen the shows online, it's very hard to connect with the piece as well. Especially when you're going from viewing room to viewing room and, you know, seeing X number of paintings. What is your opinion on that, given how 2021 is also going to look, and how you lack that physical connection, or how you lack the how one lacks to go and actually look or view a painting?
I think we all know that it's temporary, the digital realm. It can't replace fairs and visiting shows in its entirety. It's really wonderful that we're able to lean on the digital as much as we are, as the art industry internationally, and has just been able to sort of, you know, replace its physical spaces with these sort of viewing rooms and so on. But it is overwhelming. I think it is really the way that the fairs have their presence online. I think it's definitely changed when the world opens up again and we are able to participate in fairs and we are able to do international collaborations and physically visit shows. I think the digital presence will be changed forever, and it will be strong. It will mean that we can connect much more, but I don't think it can replace. I think we do need to return to being able to interact with a piece in person. The experience cannot be entirely replaced, but it is definitely keeping the art world going strong despite the situation in the world.
What would be your advice to someone navigating an online show? Or from what I hear, there are going to be new platforms which are going to also, digital platforms which will be auctioning art off as well. So what would be your advice for someone who's online navigating through these waters?
You're used to going to art fairs. It's probably much easier for you to figure out the online platforms because you will have developed your eye. But of course, if you're a first-time collector and what you have is this sort of massive choice of viewing rooms in front of you, I think then it's always quite challenging. It's better to sort of hone in on a few galleries.
Right.
And then start there. I always like to encourage people to start with your local and to understand the artists that are around you, because inevitably it will be more relatable to an individual, and then sort of move out into the fairs and regionally, internationally, as you prefer. But it's always easier to engage with that that's closest to you as a start and move from there. If that makes sense, because I just think that going immediately into our Basel viewing rooms can be incredibly overwhelming for a first-time collector, and it would just be like, you know, looking for a needle in a haystack as far as collecting is concerned. So I just don't think it's a place to start.
Right, so wait it out till the shows are finally offline. Is that what you would recommend?
Well, no. I think the interesting thing about online sites like Ocula or Artsy is that you can open an account and start saving things that you like.
Right.
So you can, and that's what a lot of clients who I work with do. You know, we're always sending them private views, etc. And we're sifting through in a certain way. I think a lot of the online allows you to do that.
Right.
Where you can save what you like, even if it's just screenshotting. And a lot of clients who I'm working with online at the moment are doing that. So,
and it saves time, I guess, as well, because you've done your research in that sense.
Yeah, it takes time. So you can, of course, start. I'm not discouraging people from engaging online. I just think that the overwhelming nature of it I think would be, it's easier to begin with galleries online as opposed to the fairs, which are so huge, or the smaller fairs at least. It always helps.
So the two aspects when you're buying a piece of art, one is something that you fall in love with and that speaks you, and one is an aspect which is, will it appreciate? So how do both of them, do they go hand in hand? Which one should you pay more weightage to? What is your opinion on that?
I personally believe in it being a good balance of both. If I purchase a work of art, I really want it to connect with me. That's number one. But in the back of my head, of course, I want it to be a good investment. I'm not going to purchase a piece simply because it's a good investment and I can think about, you know, selling it off in a decade. No, I won't approach it like that. But knowing in the back of your mind that you are spending on something which is going to appreciate is always a comfort that I like to give clients, and I also need as a collector and appreciate as a collector. It definitely is something that I know is in the back of my head. But I think if you're looking at living with a piece and hanging it in your space, you really do want to connect with it. At least most people do. So each and every collector is very different. It's very difficult to generalize about collecting because it's so much a part of what your personality is. I meet couples who are, you know, one is interested in the meaning of the work and how they connect with me. The other is the investor who wants to make sure. So a balance of both is always great, but it's everybody's very different.
And have you noticed any buying habit changes in millennial collectors and the young collectors? Like, are they more impulsive, or do they, you know, like we discussed, really don't care that much about it, appreciating? Like, what have you noticed that's changed?
I think with younger collectors, they are much more careful and patient about collecting. They want to wait and see pieces that are really good investments. They want to research art more. Whereas the older collectors that I work with are more, I find them more impulsive, actually. And I love working with younger collectors. I love working with older collectors as well, don't get me wrong. But I love the younger collectors because they really like this clean slate to work with, and they want to hear all the information, and they want to, you know, do studio visits and meet the artists and come for the walkthroughs and engage in this completely different way, which is the reason we've done all these new different, you know, events for connecting with artists and listening to them talk about the pieces, which used to, I think that was less there, sort of, with the older collectors. They're not so used to doing that. It was much more on their own individually, but I really like the young collectors and their way of approaching the art world, and there's a certain cautiousness. But when they do really love a piece as well, it's just about, you know, making it happen. So I enjoy it, actually. I think it's a nice sort of generation.
And what do you feel is like the kind of art that they're leaning towards? Are they looking at the old classics, or are they looking at, you know, more mixed media, more installation pieces? What is the general way of been so far?
I mean, I work with the Sri Lankan contemporary scene mostly, while I do also work with some of the modern pieces that we come across. So, of course, my interaction is much more with the contemporary and presenting that with collectors. And I do find that it's so incredibly interesting what's happening for us in the moment in Sri Lanka, for example. We have such a vibrant and developing scene that is really coming into its time at this time, you know, presenting on international platforms. So I do see them sort of locally, at least, leaning towards contemporary. There's a lot of contemporary work out there. Modern pieces are more difficult to come by. And generally, you have to sort of get onto a lot of online auction platforms, etc. So, of course, the entry point is always easier at contemporary. Inevitably, I think that modern then does appeal, but it's a slower process.
And, you know, a lot of the younger buyers are also doing up their homes at the same time. So usually, do they also ask you for advice as to what piece would look good in a certain area or the style of their home? How do you usually blend those two? Because that's a challenge which I've noticed a lot, that, you know, the art not always resonates with the space.
We definitely advise our collectors on how to live with the works and how to install the works. We do work with projects where
you know, collectors are building homes and looking at developing an entire collection for their new home. So that does happen. But we tend to work on those types of projects with the interior designers that we work with. So they have that sort of expertise and advise the collectors on sort of that as a whole. We do various projects of art consultancy, and this definitely sort of comes into the role that we play there. I think we play a lot of roles as a gallery, and it, one of those is inevitably how to live with art.
And what would be your advice for someone to develop their own personal taste? So one is research, of course, but how does one understand more and understand what they want more? How did you develop your personal taste? I mean, I know you've grown up with so much around you, but my question to you is how do you develop the eye and for what you want and what is your style? Because I feel everyone's style is very different.
I think you begin by looking at other collectors and being incredibly influenced by them. I see that with a lot of younger collectors. They've been inspired by somebody, whether it's a parent or a friend, a relative, a partner. It's always some sort of an influence comes from that, at least. And I think it's about when you start looking, yes, it essentially is research, but when you start looking and you start engaging, and building that confidence, that the knowledge that you then gain at that point, I think then it's sort of, as you become more confident with that, you then inevitably start to realize what you're drawn to. It's not about understanding art on the level that an art critique does.
Right.
It's really just about knowing your sense of style, like in any sense, whether it's, you know, what you like and how you dress and how you live. And it's the same with art. It's just about becoming confident in that knowledge and understanding and what you like and what you don't like. I mean, it's incredibly personal.
I'm going to end with which of your five upcoming artists that you have your eye on and why have they made it to this list?
Such a difficult question for a gallerist right away.
You can give me your personal top five.
My personal top five, top five is such a small number.
Okay, we can do top 10. Go for it.
No, I won't do top 10 and overwhelm the listeners. But my top five, so I work with a lot of established artists, but also a lot of younger artists as well. And meaning my focus via my work is very much on the Sri Lankan art scene. So a lot of the artists that I follow are Sri Lankan inevitably, as much as I also have looked regionally as well for the pieces that I collect. So for me, the artists that I'm watching at the moment, the younger artists, are quite a few that I work with. Of course, Gayan Pragith, who recently opened a show at the gallery, Eyes Only. It's an outstanding exhibition, very political, but fantastically intricate work. He's a multidisciplinary artist who has just come to this amazing stage in his practice. And Abdul Halik Aziz, who's a photographer that I work with, he's been doing exciting exhibitions internationally, residencies as well, but he's working on some really amazing documentary photography at the moment, so I have my eye on a piece of his as well. Another young artist, Hashan Kure, who's really, his forte is really portraiture, and he's I hate to say self-taught, but he is self-taught, and I think he's one of the most fantastic, promising young artists in the country. Another Sri Lankan artist who's living in Sydney, Ramesh Mario Nityendran. I just recently purchased a sculpture of his and got it shipped over from Sydney. He works with terracotta. He has pieces showing at the National Gallery of New South Wales at the moment. He's a fantastic Sri Lankan artist who's been living in Sydney. And Shyama Golden, who's another Sri Lankan artist who's living in the US. She does fantastic work with digital and also painting. So these are the artists that I'm sort of have my eye on at the moment, if I have to bring it to five.
That sounds lovely. The names, all of their work sounds very interesting. But I'm also going to ask you one thing. What would your advice, I mean, how do you navigate through digital art, performance art, and photo art? Because again, that also becomes a tricky area for young collectors to navigate through.
Digital performance and video.
I think that with digital, it's not super complicated. Meaning we do work with a lot of artists who do digital work. And I find that because, again, coming back to the sort of online presence and the ability to present it online makes it easier. The video, it's really just about watching as much as you can. We work with a wonderful site that has a similar structure to Ocular and Artsy, but it's called data.com, D-A-A-T-A, and they only work with video. Again, it's a lot of video to work through, but if you have certain artists that you're interested in and want to watch, you can sort of start there and save an account and start looking. It's really a medium that I enjoy so much, and it's just underappreciated because it's not as I don't want to say easy, but it's not as accessible,
right,
or present as, you know, painting, sculpture, drawing often is. With performance, of course, again, not easy, but I think it's, that is really about engaging. And I think performance out of all the mediums is the one where we really need to wait for the world to open up, because that, with performance art, it's a completely different experience when you're watching that online. You really need to engage and be there physically to enjoy performance art. But there's really some fantastic platforms that are promoting. And I think navigating via these platforms, I didn't mention that earlier, is also really important. It's not just the fairs and the larger artsy Ocular sites. It's also these different events internationally that are promoting different mediums are also a wonderful place to get to know different artists.
And what is your opinion on buying it in terms of it appreciating? Because I believe a lot of, you know, there's a certain price difference that comes with the photo art, digital art, and again, video art.
I mean, yes, it's really about, I think it's really about appreciating it and connecting with it in the case of mediums such as video and digital, at least. I don't think that it's going to, a lot of the digital and video work takes much more time to appreciate, at least from my understanding of it locally in Sri Lanka. And I think this means that you have to really be ready to engage. And it's not every collector who's ready to live with video and digital work, but there's such amazing work out there that I think it really needs to be acknowledged. And I do oftentimes experience that collectors are hesitant to purchase an edition,
right,
because it's in edition.
Correct.
But the editions are often limited. And I think that just means that, you know, it has a value to it that needs to be acknowledged.
Lovely. That was so insightful. Thank you so much, Saskia. It's been a great conversation to have with you. And thank you for being here. And thank you for being part of the Design Pataki podcast.
Thanks, Nisha. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in. This brings us to the end of another episode of the Design Pataki podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation. We'll see you in our next episode. Until then, head over to www.designpataki.com for stories on Indian and international design, art and architecture. Take care and see you soon.